You know, it sounds like you've made a lot of calls to people who hung up on you or told you they just don't care.
Yeah.
Has that discouraged you?
I wouldn't say discouraged. I would say I'm less naive now, but they know that there's someone who's out there who wants them to vote, period. I think that makes a difference.
Welcome to a special short bonus episode of How To. I'm Charles Duhigg. We are now in the home stretch, as you know, of the U.S. presidential election. And that means that both major candidates are doing everything they can to get your vote.
When Joe Biden's president, America is just going to have to keep up.
Joe Biden said he's absolutely on board with defunding the police.
Have to wait to deal with COVID-19. He's already got a plan.
Ever to exist.
United in our dream of a better future
is yet to come.
I'm Joe Biden.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
It's one thing to be bombarded with political ads, but what actually motivates people to turn off the TV and get off the couch and into the voting booth? Maybe you're getting calls from campaign volunteers, or you live on a street that's lined with political yard signs. But I've always wondered, does any of that actually work? That's what Isabel from Boston is trying to figure out, too.
This summer, I got involved with some political volunteering, so writing postcards to voters of color.
Isabel graduated from high school this past spring, and this fall, she was all set to attend Harvard until she decided to take a gap year because of the pandemic. And so instead, she got to see her mom battling COVID-19 as a frontline healthcare worker, which convinced Isabel that she needed to get politically involved.
She got a firsthand look at the implications of the pandemic, and for me, that really made me understand how much work there is to be done.
For Isabel, that work meant helping elect Joe Biden. And as she's gotten more involved in the Biden campaign, she's gone from writing postcards to strangers to actually talking with them on the phone. How many calls have you made?
That's a good question. Probably close to 200 or 300, maybe okay. More.
And how many people do you think you've won a new vote for Joe Biden?
Gosh, 10, 15, maybe 20. I wish it was more.
There was this one person she spoke to in particular, an older woman who had voted her entire life. And this woman spent 20 minutes on the phone with Isabel saying that she didn't feel like her voice mattered anymore.
She said, "I don't know if I'm going to vote in this election," which just really surprised me and made me think that maybe we aren't doing our job right. Like, how do we get those kind of people to vote who feel so disenchanted with our political system?
In this special episode, we're looking at how to get out the vote. And we'll hear from an expert who literally wrote the book on persuading people to go to the polls. So no matter who you support, you might want to stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind the decisions we make every day and how to make better ones. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman. Join me as I share true stories from Nobel laureates, athletes, authors, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better decisions in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
To understand what we know about getting people to cast their ballots, to accomplish what campaigns refer to as GOTV, or get out the vote, we called up Don Green, who's a professor of political science at Columbia and who spent most of his career researching voter turnout.
That's right. Did it way back when I was still a pup, back in my 30s. And now I'm in my almost at the end of my 50s. So it's been a while.
So have you solved the problem yet?
Right, exactly. if I could just get another. No. I think that we're a long ways away from it. I mean, I think what's kind of interesting actually about all these studies is that, you know, 20 plus years ago when we first started, nobody really knew anything much about how inputs translated into outputs. You know, what do you get if you send somebody a piece of direct mail or a robocall or, you know, a phone call or whatever? How much does that increase turnout?
Part of the problem when Don Green started first researching this stuff was that there wasn't a lot of science in this particular area of political science.
I think many people at the time sort of assumed, well, you know, if you knock on 1,000 doors and you talk to 1,000 people, that's 1,000 votes. And now we realize, no, it's nowhere close to a one-to-one translation of conversations into votes.
Yeah, and there's just so many more ways to communicate too, right? It's not just sending postcards or knocking on doors. Now it's text messaging and social media and robocalls and in-person calls.
At the same time, some of the tactics have kind of constrained. I would say that it's harder than ever to contact people by phone. But in some ways, in the last few years, we've returned to the idea of authentic personal interaction, in this case, say, between friends or people who know each other.
It's actually kind of surprising to me that that would be shocking to anyone. Like I would think that we would all intuitively know that if I show up and I seem genuine, that I'm going to be more effective than someone sitting in a room who's getting paid to make these phone calls.
And I think that what it really came down to, in some sense, politically, was all of a sudden lots of local party activists were saying, the parties have centralized campaign resources to the extent that it's essentially a handful of campaign consultants in Washington running the show. And we, in our humble activist way, we're actually doing a better job in terms of producing votes.
So what Donna is saying is that local political activists, people like Isabel or people who can lobby other people that they know within their community, they're actually pretty effective when it comes to turning out the vote. And you and other researchers and academics found even ways to extend this idea, right? To move from just saying, look, we ought to call up our friends and family, we ought to have volunteers make this pitch, to saying, actually, if you enlist social networks, you can leverage, for instance, a little bit of peer pressure, right?
I think that's absolutely right. In fact, I think that, some of the more interesting findings with respect to a COVID environment have to do with social networks and, essentially saying, look, Charles, it really matters to me whether you vote in this election. It means a lot to me and I hope you'll make your voice heard. And, can I get you to pledge to vote? And then I'm going to check up to make sure you do it. So, send me a selfie of you casting a ballot. Those kinds of things, in some sense, replicate the Chicago precinct captain who used to get out the vote way back in the day, but do so in a much more social network friendly manner.
What about lawn signs and billboards or writing postcards to strangers? Like, do those matter?
Well, I'd say with respect to lawn signs, they seem to influence the vote share because they're mostly about candidates, not so much about voting. But so far as we can tell, they don't have an effect on voter turnout.
So lawn signs aren't really worth your time. But when we come back, we'll hear exactly what Isabel should be doing to reach people in her community and getting them to vote. Don't go anywhere.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
We're back with Dawn Green, our expert in turning out the vote. Right before I called you, I was talking to this 18-year-old first-time voter. And she had some questions, like how should she actually be spending her time? What's the formula?
Well, I'd say that Isabel should probably be texting your friends for a couple of reasons. One is that it is an authentic friend-to-friend communication. It's not as though they're going to be blocking her and they're not going to be wondering, what organization's putting her up to it. It'll be an authentic, text from one friend to another. Second is that because she knows a lot of people who are likely to be low propensity voters, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, people who've recently moved, she's in a much better position to mobilize the kinds of people who could be mobilized in a presidential election than, say, I would. So the idea then is it's personal. she won't be blocked, so she has a high contact rate, and she's likely to have an effect because, you know, this is the kind of authentic communication that can really mobilize people.
So if you're trying to mobilize voters, you should start with the people you know. Reach out to the folks in your social circle or contact a friend of a friend. That personal connection makes your call more authentic and therefore more likely to convince someone to vote. So when she calls up a friend or she texts a friend, what would you tell her she should say?
One kind of script is where you're simply trying to mobilize a like-minded person. So if she's a Biden supporter and she's talking to people she knows to be other Biden supporters, she can pump them full of Biden supporting enthusiasm. But the alternative is to have a script that focuses much more on civic duty and making their voice heard. And so any of those scripts will probably be effective. I think it's even more effective if she can offer some kind of assistance. You know, can we go vote together, or can I help you, get registered?
Oh, that's interesting. So rather than just sort of like encouraging someone, say like, how can I help you make this happen?
Yes. And also getting them to pledge to vote is often quite effective, in part because then you can call them or text them right before the election and, basically ask them to make good on their promise.
So if I'm calling someone up and I'm encouraging them to vote, I don't want to say necessarily, I really want you to vote for Joe Biden. I just want to say, I want you to vote, period.
Yes. It's a much easier sell. And I think that it's quite effective. In part, people are sort of surprised that you're not asking more of them. Sometimes they'll volunteer that, they're going to support, in this case, Biden.
Right.
But what's kind of interesting is that when they find that you're just encouraging them to participate, there's no pushback on their part.
So the biggest thing that Isabel has encountered that has been hard for her to deal with is the cynicism of voters. She finds a lot of people who say, you know what, I just don't think it matters. I don't think my vote counts. She was talking to one woman who was in her 80s in Philadelphia, and she said, I've been voting for decades, and I'm so discouraged by all of these candidates. What do we know that Isabel should say to that person that might push them to vote?
It might be useful at that point to ask the person, who's the last candidate who really, piqued your interest or, inspired you? Because to riff off of that person might be the appropriate thing to do, rather than to push back against the person's preconceived idea. Because you don't need to get them to vote for everything. You just need to get them to vote.
Yeah. And that reminds me of something that I know I heard a lot during the Obama campaign, which was that volunteers were told, if you encounter a voter who's clearly racist, who's saying racist things, don't try and talk them out of their racism. Don't try and convince them that racism is bad. Instead, find something that they actually believe in, that they like, and just say, well, look, if you vote for Obama, even if you're racist, you're going to get what you want because he believes in the same thing you do. Is that true?
I think that's right. I think that's probably a good strategy. In part, it's good because it maintains whatever rapport is going to be maintained with the person at the door. But also, it is a kind of interesting feature of what we call persuasion in the context of these campaigns, that you're not trying to persuade people to fundamentally change their outlook on life. You're trying to persuade people that among the values that they hold dear, on any number of different issues, your candidate intersects with them. So it's like, it's like offering people, a restaurant menu. You don't have to like everything on the menu. Just find something you like.
In other words, the key here is persuading someone to vote, not persuading them to change how they see the world. And that means asking them what's important to them and then playing off of that. And one tactic you can use is what's known as the hard ask, saying to someone, okay, look, we're all going to go vote. And if you don't vote, I'm going to give you a really hard time after the election. Don says studies show this is a surprisingly effective strategy.
Whether you want to really play that kind of hardball with your friends and coworkers and whatever is up to you. And the question is, how can you do it diplomatically? And maybe the right way to do it is to say something like, Charles, it really means a lot to me that you make your voice heard in this election. Yeah, I'm happy to go where you are to vote. I'm happy to go virtually. We can FaceTime or something as you deposit your mail-in ballot into the mailbox. we can have a celebration afterward, but you can't just sit this one out.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That we make it a positive rather than you're not voting out of fear. You're voting out of expecting to celebrate with me, that we get to do something fun together.
That's right. You know, one of the things that's interesting about the Get Out of the Vote book is, you know, we're trying to find alternatives to kind of hard-edged social pressure. And one of them is gratitude. You know, I'm really going to be grateful.
Oh, that's interesting. That you actually say that to someone, like, I'm going to be so grateful when you voted.
Yes. It's going to be a great moment.
Why do you think that works?
I think it's, you know, in part because they get the message. They certainly understand what a social norm is. They understand that they're obliging you by acceding to a social norm. They'd really rather not be pressured into it because it's just painful to obey social norms. But if you're going to express gratitude, well, that feels a lot better. Even if somebody says, well, I'm not sure I'm going to vote after you've talked to them about voting, well, you've probably nudged them a little bit. And if you nudge them a little bit, if you nudge enough people a little bit, you're going to generate votes.
I love that. Makes me want to make a difference even more. And I hope that as November approaches and that I reach out to my friend, that I'll be able to take on that same attitude and make them feel the same way. And just this conversation has made me want to work on this even more and keep working on this, because even if I'm 18 and just hanging out in my grandparents' apartment and making phone calls to voters in Pennsylvania, like, one person has the power to make a difference, which is really cool.
Thank you to Isabel for sharing her idealism and her struggles with us, and to Don Green for all of his fantastic advice. If you're interested in this stuff, you should definitely look for his book, Get Out the Vote. And we'll be back next Tuesday, like normal, with another regular episode of How To. How To's executive producer is Derek John. Rachel Allen and Rosemary Belson produce the show, and Merritt Jacob is our engineer. Our theme music is by Hannes Brown. June Thomas is senior managing producer, and Alicia Montgomery is executive producer of Slate Podcasts. Gabriel Roth is Slate's editorial director of audio. I'm Charles Duhigg. Thanks for listening, and go vote.